Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of the This Is Gonna Hurt podcast with J. Gordon Duncan. And if you're wondering why the J, the answer is I'm not a bagpipe player. And if that joke doesn't make any sense, I encourage you to check out episode zero, where I explain that joke, as well as the purpose of the This Is Gonna Hurt podcast, where we talk about faith, family, fitness, finances, and sometimes fun. Well, friends, thanks so much for being back on this episode. I don't know where you are, but here it is windy and rainy, and the effects or the after effects of, I think it is Hurricane Ophelia coming through. We're safe, not a problem here, but it is a cold, rainy day. Typically, at this point in time, I'm up, showered, shaving, going, but it's a cold, rainy day, and I'm a bit casual. Didn't get to record in the studio this week. The last couple of weeks, we've been in studio, actually recording with the CACS Creative Mastermind. That was the last two episodes, and that was a lot of fun. Thank you for everyone who had interest and some questions about the Mastermind. And but I'm at home now. This week just didn't put itself together in a way where I could be either in the studio or with the Mastermind. And I would love your feedback if you guys like that format. It's a tight 20-minute format with a group. And so if any of you guys would like to give feedback on that or would like to be a part of that Creative Mastermind, just let me know. But what we talked about last week was how do you create creativity and maintain it? And again, I appreciate all the feedback. I posted it and immediately got a couple of folks to just respond to me. So thanks again. I appreciate the likes, shares, and reviews, and the subscriptions. So this week, it took me a little bit to get together an idea of a topic. And if you remember, about a month or so ago, I toured around with the idea of starting another podcast. I still haven't made that commitment yet because starting a podcast is a weekly commitment. And I've had three or four others that didn't make it. The This Is Gonna Hurt podcast has been going on 5+ years. And that one, it just keeps going. But the other ones didn't. Some of them had a naturally ending life cycle. But I didn't want to start one unless I could, commit to it. And I've been wanting to do something a little bit more fun, a little bit more lighthearted, maybe something based upon pop culture. I don't think right now my podcast with Emma, the You're Entitled to Your Opinion podcast, is going to rekindle anytime soon. She's incredibly busy with school and marching band and life and like that. So I just don't think that one's going to rekindle. It's always there. If we want to upload a new episode, we can. And I would love to do that. But for me, I was just thinking, let me do something lighthearted and fun. Now, if any of you guys know me personally or have been around me or even followed me online these years, you know that my favorite band in the world is the rock band Kiss. Yes, the guys with the kabuki makeup and the breathing the fire and all that stuff. And I used to call them a guilty pleasure, but they're not a guilty pleasure. It's what I listen to. It's what I like. And there's a reason behind that. I want to share the reason behind my fandom of that. But even more so, I want to talk about how being a fan of Kiss has actually affected not only my marketing company, but the genesis of it and some of the ongoing principles. Now, if you know anything about the rock band Kiss, they were formed in 1973. Paul, Gene, Ace, and Peter, and they each have different characters for their makeup. And they've had different incarnations. They've had different people in makeup. They had a period of time without makeup. Then they put the makeup back on, and then they had different people in the original makeup. But they are celebrating their 50th anniversary this year, and their last show is, I think, either December 2nd or 3rd in Madison Square Garden. This time, they promised that they are retiring for real. They're in their 70s, or at least two of their members. And Emma and I have tickets for the Baltimore, Maryland show. That's two nights or two shows before their final show. So we're really excited about that. I've seen Kiss, I don't know, 7 times or so. And on this farewell tour, I've seen them twice, once with my family and once with my brother in Texas. And they're a blast. They really are. The fire and people flying through the air. And yes, they're going to play the same set list they've been playing for 20 years. But I don't care. It's a lot of fun. So what I want to tell you a little bit is my history of how I became a fan of the band, and then I'd like to share how they became just a part of my marketing company and my marketing genesis from there. Now, how did a Southern Baptist preacher's kid become a fan of Kiss? Well, in 1976, Christmas 1976, my brother David and I received two albums. We received a Spider-Man album. It's very cool. You could listen to that. You could watch a comic book You could read the comic book, and there were characters acting it out. They had different characters for each character. It was very cool. It was about Jonah Jameson's son going to the moon, and he got a rock, and the rock turned him into a werewolf, and Spider-Man fought him. It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Loved it, loved it, loved it. But my parents also gave me a second album, and it was Kiss Destroyer. Which was the album after Kiss Alive that really broke them through. Songs like Detroit Rock City, their only major award they won for Beth. They won a People's Choice Award that year. And my parents just, I guess, thought that Kiss was another comic book. So we got Spider-Man and we got Kiss Destroyer. And I've got to say that I'd never heard anything like that in my life, and I wore that album out. I remember my brother and I in our room, the light switch controlled the plug in the wall. It happens all the time, right? And so when you flipped on the light switch, the plug became activated. And what we would do is we had the album and we would just leave it on and put the needle on the record. So when we walked in the room, we would flip the switch and Kiss Destroyer would just automatically start playing. It would play and play, and we turned it off and we left the room. And you know, I mean, I was 6 and 7, and through the age, I mean, there was I couldn't buy my own albums, but my brother Paul had their album Hotter Than Hell on, which I thought was so bad, on reel to reel, and we had an 8-track of Kiss Dressed to Kill. As I moved into my teenage years, I started to get their cassettes and eventually their CDs. But the thing that made Kiss so big for a little kid was that they were larger than life. They had action figures, they had comic books, they made a very corny movie, Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park, which was like a Phantom of the Opera type movie. Really bad, very funny to watch. Instead of going to the theaters, it came on NBC, and I remember watching it. I haven't seen it in years. I need to find a copy of it. But it's, I mean, just they played so much part of my childhood, and we didn't have the money for the toys. And I really, there were so many toys I wanted, and I wanted a Kiss, Halloween costume, but we weren't allowed to trick or treat as religious kids. And I got hold of a Kiss mask, but I couldn't have the costume. I just loved it and their solo albums. But I mean, it played so much of my youth. And even when they took their makeup on during the glam metal years, I still loved them and still listened to them. And so really never, I'm 52. So for most of my life, 46 years of their 50 years as a band, I mean, I've been listening to them. And so they've just been part of my childhood all the way through. And listen, they've got some great songs. They've got some dreadful songs, but they've just been a fun band to listen to and watch. But growing up, I mean, just the merchandising. I mean, you could buy Kiss bubblegum cards, for a quarter, and you got cards and you got a piece of bubblegum, which was really stiff. And we were trying to collect all the cards. And so, I mean, they were just a merchandising machine in the 70s. And when they reunited in 1996 with the original band members, their merchandising machine took off. You could get anything. Kiss candles, Kiss caskets, Kiss condoms. They even at one point in time sold a pack of Kiss air guitar strings, which is literally a package that guitar strings comes in, and there's nothing in there. And I've never been an avid collector of their stuff. I mean, I've had pieces here and there and a few things. Not guitar instrument, musical instruments, yes. I mean, I don't if you're probably not gonna be able to see this, but like I've had this Paul Stanley guitar, acoustic guitar for years. I have a Paul Stanley electric. I used to have another electric that I sold at one point in time. I've got a few things now in my little office cave down here. I've got a poster on the wall. But I mean, I was never like an avid collector where I had to have every single, I wasn't a completionist or any of that stuff. But listen, I listen to their music. I still listen to it, a couple times a week. I listen to the podcast. But the thing is, they're amazing merchandisers. I mean, they found a way to create something beyond music. They make, I'm sure, more mu money off their merchandising than they do their music. In fact, I'm pretty confident of that. Most people can't name any song of theirs other than Rock and Roll All Night and Party Every Day, and they've sold 100 million records worldwide. They hold a distinction even over the Beatles. They have more gold albums than any other artist, which is crazy. They've just found a way to continually be part of the culture. since their first album in 1973, and here we are, 2023, and supposedly they're playing their last show in makeup with two back-to-back nights in Madison Square Garden. And so they remain popular, as popular as ever, maybe not as popular as the 70s, but still they continue to tour and sell out. Well, their merchandising and their impression was never lost on me. And when they rolled into the 90s and they reunited with the original band members, they all started putting out books. So they put out a book about the band and a book about the songs and a book about the tours. Each one of the individual members have all done autobiographies. Gene Simmons and Paul, I think, have each done two. And then there's a whole merchandising machine of books written about them. But this is where their career intersected with my career. I've told this story several times, and I'll tell it again. But in 2003, ironically enough, when I was in seminary and managing my eye doctor's office, I put in a four-month notice because I just really didn't feel like I was doing anything well. I didn't feel like I was managing the office well. I wasn't going to seminary well. I wasn't being a husband or a dad well. There was just I didn't know how to manage that many things at the time at that point. And I was also in a little bit of conflict with my boss, and I'll take my responsibility for that. So I put in a four-month notice to train my replacement and then figure out how to make a living so I could go to seminary full time. And so I'm wrestling with this. I'm like, how am I going to do this? And patiently, Amy's trying to figure it out. Well, I was reading two books at this time. So again, it's 2003. I'm in seminary. I'm reading theology books. I'm doing all this stuff. But I'm also reading two books on the side. One was called How to Be a Marketing Superstar, which is a very early 2000s type name for a book. And I was reading Gene Simmons' book, Kiss and Sell. So it's going through his history, but it's also talking about the approach Kiss has taken with their merchandise. And one of its principles in that was to never lose money. Now you go, well, that makes sense, but a lot of companies lose money. And so what that means for them is when they license their names, the name of the band, their images on any product, whether it be Hello Kitty or a coffee company. They actually had Kiss coffee shops in Myrtle Beach at one point in time, which we went to. It was very cool, didn't make it. They've got a Kiss Monster Golf in Vegas, those kind of things. Whenever they license those things, they always make sure they don't lose money, which means that they take enough of an upfront and enough of the back end that there's no cost to them. If the venture fails, they make money on it. And so just reading the story was fascinating to me as a fan and just as a reader and someone who is getting ready to be unemployed. So I'm reading these two books and I'm finishing my run at the eye doctor's office. And I had a dream one night, and I don't typically remember my dreams. And somehow in this dream, I was, all this stuff was floating through my brain, and I woke up and I told Amy, it's like, I got it. I'm going to start an eye care consulting business. I had worked with an eye care, an optometric consultant about a year earlier, and she came into offices and shared her wisdom and expertise so that they could become profitable and that they could improve their efficiencies. And I just thought, that's what I'll do. I'll start my own eye care consulting business. But the principles underneath of what I was reading in the Kiss and Sell book was, wait a minute, there's a way to do this so that I never lose money. And so I approached my initial cost and was built into that so I would never lose money. And any expenses I incurred, while doing the marketing, I never paid for that. I always built that in, and then travel. And so I built this approach based upon the book that I'll be okay if I can get the gigs if I don't ever lose money in the offer. And so that approach and reading that book and the other book gave me the idea. And so then I started my first business in 2003. And amazingly, 20 years later in 2023, I still work in the medical industry, eye care, primary care, dental, sleep study. And so the genesis of Capitalized Marketing started in 2003 with reading that book. And it has morphed into what I do now. I don't think I would be doing what I'm doing now if I hadn't read that book and had that same inspiration. And so to some extent, I can attribute what I've read and experienced and grew up on and watching kids do to start my business. And now I have a successful marketing company that's growing every single day. And I keenly pay attention to whatever those guys are doing because they continue to be successful. There's times I laugh and joke when I wind up quoting what I've read of them. Gene Simmons, the bass player, has this quote where he says, "I don't care what you say about me, just spell my name correctly." And I'm sure that's not attributed. I'm sure he didn't originally say that. He'll say it probably was. But I remember his point behind that was you need people talking about you. Yes, we want people to speak well of ourselves. But ultimately, he's like, if people aren't talking about you, if people aren't aware of you, people can't purchase your product or buy your service or whatever the case may be. And so that was very important to me. Like, it takes a lot of work to get your name out there, get it out there. Now, I do care what people say about me in terms of the reputation of the company. I don't really worry about what people think of me, people who don't like what I'm doing. I'm not worried about that. But, you know, my reputation in marketing and coaching as a business, I care about. But I do want people to know my brand, Capitalize Your Best, Capitalize Marketing. And ironically, as I look in the screen now, I really should be wearing one of my KISS t-shirts. I've probably got four or five, and all my daughters have slept in oversized KISS t-shirts throughout their whole life. But oh well. But the whole idea there was you've got to have enough of a market presence that people know who you are. And that way, ultimately, when it gets to it, that as long as they know who you are and can speak of you specifically, you're going to grow. I care what people say about the company and the reputation of the company. But in a very Gene Simmons way, he's like, listen, he doesn't care as long as you spell his name correctly. And so that whole approach of creating a business that provides value to other people, creating it so you're not losing money, creating it so that there's enough of a brand awareness that people will be able to choose you when there's that option, has played a huge part in growing my business. And I can see how that has affected lots of other industries other than mine. I can see concert principals. I can see the merch approach of other rock bands have all been influenced much by the way KISS approached that thing. Because who else had action figures in the 70s but KISS? And so the idea that I took away from it is build a distinct personal brand, distinct from everyone else. What makes you different? KISS has their thing. They weren't wholly original. I mean, bands like Alice Cooper and other bands had done things similar to KISS, but their four faces were completely distinct. People knew who they were. All four members sang. I mean, there were some things about them that set them apart. Their stage shows, which are copied by everybody now, was distinct in the beginning. And now when you go to a show, you know what you're going to get. And that reminded me in building my business, make Capitalize Marketing, make Capitalize Your Best distinct, make those branding things specific, put out a lot of content, make it as good as possible so that people can begin to know who you are. It takes so much to build a brand like that. Create your company in a way that you're not losing money. That seems like such a common principle, but so many people just lose money and lose money and lose money. And you've got to build principles of how is this profitable? How can I do this thing if I spend this money? Like, I'll give you an example. I paid for coaching over the last 18 months, and some of it was very expensive, but I had it built in such a way, and the coaching I paid for netted if I spend this money, the company will make this much money. Well, that then impacted the way we offer our services, like our 12-month Capitalize Your Best program. If you complete the program, we promise a positive ROI. We don't want you to spend money and lose money. And so that same approach, because we know that people in their businesses and their dollars have got that thought, I can't lose money. Well, run your business in the same way, and it'll be healthy and it'll grow. And so much of that came from reading the books by KISS, watching what they've done, seeing their merchandising, and then going from there. And so gradually, I'm building a capitalized brand, capitalized marketing, capitalized coffee. I've got a Capitalize Your Best eye care. I've got another one I haven't launched yet. I'm really not talking about, but building a brand that's consistent. So friends, that's where all those things played into it, and a lot of fun songs and some dreadful songs. But listen, when you've got 20 plus albums, it's really hard to write that many good songs. But to me, a ton of fun, ton that I just shake my head at, and some that are my absolute favorite in the world. It's been fun to take my kids. I've seen them with my brother I've seen it with my brothers. And then, before COVID, I took the whole family, Amy and the three girls. And then it looks like Emma and I are going to see them at the very end of November. Maybe last chance we'll get to see them. But friends, that's where that history comes from. It's had a huge impact on me. That's when people just shake their head when I tell them that's what I like. You can't escape the music you listen to in your youth and your teenage years. It had a huge impact on me and a huge impact on my business. So today's just been a fun episode, letting you know the origin of the music I like, but the impact it's made on my business. And what I'd really love to know is what pop culture items, books, or interests have affected you, both in you personally and your business. I think it'd be great to hear. So if you get a chance, share those things with me on social media or send me an email or message me. You can find me everywhere. And I can't wait. Hopefully be back in the studio next week. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.